Good morning and welcome to ITE 1, DC2, Module 5. And this is where we get into the nitty-gritty and all the preparation work you've done in Chapters 1, 2, 3 and 4 will start to come together. And you can start applying some of that wonderful knowledge that you've gotten. And I'd like to say thank you for all the students who so far have returned worksheets. And I know some of you have set the module exams. We've activated them again today for you. So basically, happy studying and work well done, everybody. There's still a couple of Chapter 3 worksheets that have come in from various students that I've still got to mark. But all indicators are so far that people are progressing rather well. So congratulations, gang. Today's lecture is to do with installing an operating system. Now, we've really only got half an hour, so we will have to break this over two sessions, but I think that's okay. It's a long one anyway, and I'm going to get the lecture out from last year when Geraldine did it to see exactly if she did the same thing. I'm not sure whether she did or not. But essentially speaking, today's module, or Module 5, is all about operating systems. And we'll basically go through the installation of an operating system. We'll talk about navigating a GUI and the command line, and we'll talk about some of the file systems, file attributes, and things along the way through. So I'm going to start off with a quick little question to our wonderful students out there, and I'll start with you, Mark, and then we'll go through. What is an operating system? Do you have any idea of what you think an operating system is for, why we have it, etc.?
It makes it easier to access files.
Yep. Without it, we couldn't access files. Jackie, can you tell us what else an operating system does, as well as allowing us to access files? I wonder whether Jackie's gone off again. Sure, as long as you're still recording, because I'm not. Now, I know Jackie had some connectivity issues before during Grace's section. Are you still with us, Jackie?
Yeah, I believe I am. I think I am.
Great. Well, welcome back. I was just asking students, and Mark's answered one part of the question. Why do we have an operating system on our computers? He's already said to make it easier to access files. Do you have anything to elaborate on that, Jackie?
Well, of course, you have to, the operating system allows one to interface between the user and the hardware, basically, and software.
Yep. So basically, yeah, exactly. We can interface with the hardware, and it manages the programs. It does things like disk management, memory management, and basically provides a framework in which the operator can react back with the computer. Okay, now, we've spent a lot of talk in the media and stuff about various operating systems, so let's go through. I think I remember this from last year, actually, where everybody named as many operating systems, either Microsoft or non-Microsoft, as they possibly can. So, open slather, everybody. Let's hear them.
I'd have to go with there's Linux and...
go, Chris. Yep, keep going, Mark, just for the audio, and then I'll read some of the hits on OS. I'll have to read back for the people listening later what some of those suggestions in the chat were. Go ahead, Mark.
Well, that was about it. Those are the only two that I can think of at the moment.
Yep, you can have a look at Chris' suggestions in the chats. He's nominated quite a few there. There's obviously Windows is the most widely used among the desktop environment. People often say it's the most popular, but depends on your definition of popular. Windows is there now. You've obviously got OS2, which has been around for a long time. Then there's DOS in the old real mode days. We've got different. We've got Mac OS, BSD, Unix, and of course Linux. Now let's have a look at both Windows and Linux for a bit, because they actually divide down into different flavors of each of those operating systems. And can anyone suggest to me either some that you've used or some that you know? And particularly, let's start with, say, Windows first.
I think Christopher just wrote a whole boatload of them.
Yes, he did. So, just for the audio, it's great having Christopher on chat, but unfortunately, he's not going to come out to the recording. Yes, we're talking about Windows 3.1, Windows 3.11, Windows X, well, sorry, Windows NT 3 and 4, Windows ME, Windows XP, Windows 2000, Windows Server 2003, Windows Server 2, and the list goes on, and I'm quite sure we all know them. And sometimes one of the hardest things to do is to know, particularly with Vista, it's turned into a marketing nightmare, and I don't care what anybody says, but it's difficult to know whether you got home premium and office, home or premium or professional, and what flavour of Windows XP you're getting. And that was one of the criticisms, not with Windows XP, rather with Windows Vista. One of the criticisms, and there have been many with Windows Vista, of course, is to which one do you actually choose? Because part of this module actually goes into getting to... Yes, Chris is just saying he's answered many support calls on DVD playback on Vista. What? It's probably what? Non-existent? Chris?
It's just flaky.
Yeah, it's just flaky, and there's just so many different types. And this gets tricky because, I mean... Yeah, what Chris is trying to say here on the chat for people listening is that some people aren't sure whether they've got it, let alone whether it even works. And, you know, if you're in the home domestic market, and I learned this from about 12 years ago, maybe 11, 12 years ago when I was doing help desk in the consumer area, is that you don't have an SOE, so the person rings up with their DVD player or their CD burner or whatever we had at the time, and it won't go, and they've got an operating system that is probably not got all the right bits in it, and it can be a heck of a nightmare to support. So as technicians, you really want to research what the customer needs when you're going to deliver an operating system, and whether that operating system will suit their needs. I'll just have to scroll down and look at my notes while we're doing that. Now, while I'm scrolling down, I will take the opportunity to suggest this is a really good, important chapter to really read the chapter module for this one. There's going to be an awful lot more in it than we're going to get through, even if we had 2 hours of lecture. While I'm scrolling down, who here has installed an operating system? I'd imagine Chris Wolf, obviously. Jackie, I assume you've installed Windows?
I have.
Grace has, yes.
How many?
Here, of course. How many? Yes,
exactly.
I'd for every time I did it too. I'd be very rich if I got. How about you, Mark? Have you ever installed an operating system?
I believe I did a very long time ago. I think it was when I was running Windows ME, and I don't remember every step I took.
Windows ME, was it? Why is my mouse button not clicking? That's better. Okay, so it's been a little while since you've done one properly. That's all right, because there is a good lab here in Module 5 that walks you through the steps, and I really encourage people to do that. Bit of a pity we don't have a virtual machine active at the moment that we can hand out where people are supposed to, but that's on the books. But for the local students, that sort of stuff is available. Now, where am I scrolling? I have scrolled too far down. Now, when installing an operating system, can anyone suggest to me what you might need to be thinking about doing first? The first thing you should always do, if you're either upgrading an operating system or you're actually putting a new one on, yeah, backup's a good option. But even if you're doing it onto a new computer where there's no data.
Read the docs.
Yes, read the docs, and more importantly, the HCL. And does anyone know what HCL stands for?
Hardware compatibility list.
Yep, most operating systems have them, and it tells you that, you know, is this operating system going to work with the hardware you've got? There's no point going out, particularly if you're working with a client and you're billing them for the operating system for the license, if you're installing a Microsoft one, and you come back and find it won't go on their computer. So these days, Windows is pretty pretty flexible, but whereas they've got some device, for example, and we used to see this a lot years ago, where they'd have some fancy obscure scanner, and it worked okay under Windows 95, but when Windows 98 went on the system, it didn't go. And was always a chase around to the vendor of the scanner to see if they had the appropriate driver. So you need to be aware of those. It's okay to update the operating system if you've got a scanner that doesn't work, as long as you tell the customer and that you take appropriate action to get the device working again after you've done your upgrade. Okay, the next thing we do when we're installing an operating system is that so we've got the computer, we know the computer boots up. We did all that back in Chapter 3, we assemble a computer. We first have to partition the hard drive and prepare the hard drive for the operating system and the file system that's going to go on to that hard drive. Some people tend to have more than one partition, depending on a lot of... Yes, exactly right. Most operating systems installation utility will generally partition. Sorry, Chris. I've got back into my notes now, that's good. Okay, now basically speaking, you do need to partition the hard drive, and most operating systems, setup utilities will allow you to do that. You can, of course, partition the hard drive on another machine with the appropriate software and put that hard drive in if you want, but it's generally better to start with a nice clean slate and let the operating system do it instead. Now with the Windows operating system, you can just simply go follow this and allow one partition for one file system, which will be one operating system. But if you're like me, you might want to have a drive for the operating system itself and a drive for the data. Now whilst they're still on the same physical hard drive, it does allow that little bit of extra security if, for example, the operating system goes west and you need to rebuild it. And if you can get your user to save your data onto another partition, it's another level of protection. It makes backups far easier if you just back up your D drive rather than trying to back up a C drive. Yep, exactly. So it makes backups a lot easier.
Long as the physical hard drive itself hasn't failed.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. If you've got it all on one hard drive and the physical hard drive fails, well, then you're sunk. So it is even better, and in later years, since I've had more money and more resources, I've actually just done that, put two hard drives in most cases. The main desktop computer I use actually still has one hard drive, but because it doesn't go anywhere, it's connected up to the file server, so to be honest, I don't like saving data on a Windows partition, particularly when that Windows partition is the system partition, so that's just my personal choice. But that's okay, because that machine doesn't go anywhere, it's permanently hooked up to a file server, so all the data goes there. So anything that's on the C drive can basically be lost. The unfortunate thing to that, of course, is that you've got to remember that... Oh, absolutely, you put the system partition on first, if possible, makes it far, far faster. Now we need
actually some operating systems require it.
Yes, Windows will only really like to be on one active partition, so you can actually have one active partition with the Windows operating system and one action at a time. Linux is a little bit more forgiving. So with our partition, let's say we've got one drive, one partition, or one drive, two partitions. We decide that we're going to format this partition. Now, can anyone tell us what are the two commonly used file systems that you can format your partition to if you're installing a version of Windows 2000 or Windows XP?
Yeah, FAT32.
Yep, FAT32 is one of them. And did somebody mention NTFS?
Chris did.
Yep, Chris did. Is that you back there, Leon?
You went ahead and did both of them.
Yeah, exactly. Well, usually you only get the two with the modern hard drives now because you can't, with the file sizes, you've got a restriction with file size, and this is in your test too. And I should actually have the notes a little bit more, but basically you really only get the option with the larger hard drives to install with NTFS. You can install the FAT, if you're on a small partition. And if you do, you can always change that to NTFS later on using the Windows conversion utility. Leon, are you back yet?
That's the
I am here.
Okay, for the people out there, what does NTFS and FAT stand for, my dear?
FAT stands for File Allocation Table. NTFS is New Technology File System.
All right.
Yeah, she's the queen of acronyms. She's still the queen of acronyms. Okay, so we're installing onto the active partition. We can only have, under Windows, we can only have one primary partition marked as active. As I said, Windows is a little bit more forgiving. We use make extended partitions and use those for data. There can only be one extended partition per hard drive as well. Within the extended partition area, you install your logical, you have your logical drive. So you might create a primary partition, and then you might make a an extended partition, and then you can carve up that extended partition into one or more logical drives. And I did that once. I had this little 3D hard drive with about five partitions all over it years and years ago, just to be clever. So now we're going to format, and we usually format to the 32 to the NTFS file system. Generally, Windows will call the system drive, drive what, guys? Drive C.
And
you can actually change that, but it causes all sorts of grief if you do, and people come along, get confused and go, oh, why is the D drive the system drive? But it will. Well, that's right. Some programs are hard-coded and look for drive C. So, the partition is broken up into clusters, cylinders and tracks. Clusters, tracks and then cylinders. Then we do our drive mapping, so we can, I'll get you to refer to the notes to know which order they go. Yeah, well, of course, with the cluster size, the size of the cluster size can cause hard disk wastage, as Chris is just basically pointing out. With a 4K cluster size, you've got a 1K file, you've wasted 3K. So that's the default, and most people generally use the default. I often call it slack space, what we used to call it. I'm just scrolling down, at least it's scrolling down. I'm using the two file systems. Now there's a good lab here that if you can't do the lab, at least go through it. And I remember doing this lab when I was a student last year. It really outlines the process step by step, and it's quite easy and it's good. It tells you in the lab to reinstall the operating system using default settings, and that for new students is quite adequate. Okay, when you get to the stage of after your formatting, generally what Windows will do is copy itself to the hard drive so that it can usually pre-installation copy of itself. Then usually prompts you to do a typical or a custom install. The typical install is the most of what are deemed to be the most commonly used features of an operating system. A custom install, if you're a little bit more experienced, and it's usually the option I take, allows you to generally go in and customise it a little bit so there's less work to do later. You can install, add, remove programs. Now, I know with Windows 2000 Professional, you've got a lot to uninstall and to install during the custom. My recollection of the installs I've done for Windows XP, I think there was a lot less you could customise about it, to be frank. Although I do seem to remember going through the network setup and the country and time zone type options when you do the custom install. So in the notes it's referring to, as I'm scrolling past, all your currency settings, your time zone, where you are in the world. Currency and language settings are important. A lot of people go through when they're doing custom installs of Windows and they just go, oh yeah, next. Now, usually the default is somewhere on the United States East Coast, which I think you guys call Atlantic Time. That really doesn't suit too well if you happen to be living in Perth or Melbourne. we're quite a few hours ahead of that. And of course, if you don't set those up, all your emails will go out and all bear the wrong date and time.
Can I make a bigger point there? If you happen to set your language preferences and stuff incorrectly, for example, interesting thing that's come up is Grace's computer is still set for US settings, so that she gets all those silly imperial measurements and all that sort of thing. We actually need to, we can't actually change her over because she likes feet and inches for some bizarre reason, which means all of her paper sizes are going to be wrong. She'll have to override it in every application to say A4, not letter.
Speaking of which, what is A5 and A6, Kerry?
They're actually half the size of A4 and half the size of A5, respectively.
Half the size of A5.
Wow.
So A4 is 210 by 297 millimetres, and then you basically halve those dimensions for A5 and halve them again for A6.
Is A5 equivalent to legal?
No. Legal is actually longer than A4.
Where does Foolscap fit into that? It's been a little while since I've... Go on, Kerry, sorry.
The measurements are available in Word if you want to look them up. That's probably the easiest way to find out how big they are.
The best thing to do is look up in Word, and I can imagine what Grace would do. Maybe you can at least get Grace to set her paper size standard anyway and a time zone, and you'd probably be... lucky to get her.
Yeah, that's what I did. I set my time zone and all that.
Set the papers. Yeah, set the time zone and paper, and at least be kind to us Aussies. Actual fact, in the old days.
Yeah, I will, and I did.
It used to be in the old days.
Well, the interesting thing is her GPS is. Yeah, I was going to say, her GPS is set in feet, and it drives me completely batty. It's like, I don't want 250 feet. Give it to me in metres.
Yeah, exactly.
I do.
Oh, you imperial people, you. It's funny that. there's the greatest democracy in the world. That's a republican system running imperial. Great, work that one out.
Okay, we should probably go back to lecture, I think, before I get myself shot and you get yourself into trouble.
Exactly. Oh, I'm safe. I'm a long way away. But anyway, all the other stuff aside, where was I? Just a thing with the paper size. I used to be always plagued in the old days of WordPerfect. You'd go along to RVIB, as it was at the time, to do your little WordPerfect course, and you would go along and you'd print your document out on the laser printer that had a nice big fat tray of A4, and it would say load letter, and you'd have to go and keep the laser printer going because I don't think anyone knew that you could set the paper size up properly. These days, I think applications are a little bit more forgiving, but it can cause problems. So, yeah, set your papers, get your regional settings right, and Windows will work it out for you. But knows you're in Australia, it will pretty much, I think, set the paper size for you. I don't think I've ever had to do it in Word since I've been...
In fact, the way to deal with this properly is to set your measurement units in Word to inches and your... regional settings in Australia, because that is actually acceptable to do that way, and that way you get the correct paper sizes but you still get the units you know and love.
Yes, so that's always a good idea. Now what are we doing? In the notes it gives you the option of quitting if you want to start and not finish it for some reason. Okay, so if you're in the lab doing that lab, you would obviously proceed by setting the setup Windows XP option. Creating accounts. Yes, I see why we're up to that bit already.
Is it worth pointing out at this point that if you do have a trial version of VMware Workstation, you can actually do your own XP virtual machine installation by feeding in the ISO and the product key, and it will come up to the point where it's singing and dancing, and then you can install your screen access software. There is only a trial version of VMware Workstation. We can't give you all one, sadly. Our VMware Server doesn't have that functionality.
Sounds good. Now, it does talk about account setup here. It does when you're installing Windows, and the same thing goes for Linux. Early in the installation process, it will prompt you for, in Windows, the administrator account. It's usually called administrator, and it's an account that's very, very rarely used. And you can give it a password. Sorry? In Linux, it will ask you for the root password. Won't change the username, but it's usually called root, and we'll ask you for the password. So again, be careful with what you type, because you will actually need the root password to do anything with the machine after you've installed your Linux install and you need to log in and do stuff. With Windows, it'll just come up to a desktop and probably have some default user. I can't remember, to be honest.
Sorry, we'll stop chatting now. We don't want that on the recording.
Okay. The admin account has fewer permissions than a standard user account for obvious reasons. It allows you to use the administrator account to get in and fix things. However, with Windows, you can make a user account have administrative privileges, and most of us do that because it's very difficult to do much with a Windows box that doesn't have administrative privileges. Now, okay. Now, what happens is the operating system will then proceed and copy all the operating system, all the files necessary to run the operating system to your hard drive. By this time, it's also plug and played your hardware, so it knows sort of what sound you've probably got, or may know what sound you've got, what network and what graphics you've got. However, having said that, I don't think I've ever seen Windows start up on a Realtek sound system by itself. So you may need to install additional sound drivers and video drivers and even network drivers when the system's booted. Now, obviously, for sighted people, this is...
Absolutely. Love them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, absolutely. Now, obviously, I was going to just exactly say that for sighted people. They can just go along and put the Windows operating system on without sound and go and install their Sound Blaster or Vire or Realtek or whatever sound system they've got.
However,
but if you're vision impaired, you can use a USB headset or a USB audio sound card, which you just plug it in, and as Chris said on the chat, is invaluable. Go ahead.
If you're sighted and you want to go and drink rum while the install proceeds, you might want a USB sound card and speaker so you can tell when the install's finished, when it starts playing happy music.
Indeed, yes. But when
yes, you're saving the configuration for another night.
yeah, absolutely. You can do that and then save your configuration. Yeah, it sings and dances and carries on a bit, because then you get the OBE, out-of-box experience. Wow, how about that? Not out-of-body experience. And this is where you go through and finalise installation. Oh, I did forget to mention one important thing you do with a Microsoft operating system whilst around about the time you do your... your custom, your date and time and regional settings. It's around about that time in installation. You don't need to do it for Linux. Can anyone tell me what it is? Yeah, that's it. Like, yep. Absolutely. What would a Microsoft operating system be without a product key? So you put that in early.
Actually,
on.
that's the first thing you've got to do before you do any of the date
I did forget that. Anyway, yes, you can put your pot.
I actually saw a write-up. It was done by Gordon, I've got too much time on my hands.
Neighbourhood-sided person to read it to you.
Yeah, no, we had Gordon. He's actually got a complete write-up on how to install Windows without speech, complete with how many enter keys and tab keys and when you type the product key.
Oh,
and
kidding.
It's, yeah.
That's cool.
Now, that does take a lot of time, so. Very useful, but probably
enlighten anybody.
Required to make it.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah. When we get to chapter 12 or 11 or 10 or one of those, there is a module that we do here in RT1 that tells you how to install it using the SIF file, which means we can put a lot of that information in, and you basically just let it run, and including the product key.
So it would just be fun as an interesting little experiment to actually try to install it, his method, and see if it actually works.
With the thing, yeah, I know people who've done it, and yes, it did work.
Cool.
What are we talking about here?
This is with Gordon's guide and pressing all the enter keys and stuff.
Gordon's guide, right. Yeah,
yeah, the tabs and the enters and everything, yeah.
So where do you find this thing?
It's in my inbox somewhere. I'll dig it up. A couple of years back, I got a copy. Otherwise, I'll email him for it. Oh, isn't that the Windows Vista deployment kit or something?
Yeah, they've got a deployment kit under Windows XP as well.
Nlight has a thing called Vlite, though, now.
Yep.
I'll catch you all later, folks.
Yes, well, we're almost at that time. It's almost pumpkin time. So basically, I'll just finish off the notes because we've actually come up to a good stopping point here. Once you get to the OBE or out-of-box experience, and we'll talk more about this next week, you are required, if you've got a network connection, you can actually register at the time and also activate your Windows. If you've if you put in your network settings and you know that computer will actually work on the network, you can go straight ahead and go straight on the net and register. Otherwise, you can always come back and do it later. And I think, having got to that point, after the out-of-box experience and
just a comment,
Windows, if you haven't clicked the skip button, go ahead, Kerry.
Don't activate until you've got the first instance of every device in your machine, because if you add in, say, for example, your primary sound card or stuff, the activation ID will change and then you'll have to reactivate again. So make sure all of the devices are actually installed and recognised, otherwise Windows may force you to reactivate once you put the motherboard drivers in.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. So there it is. Well, that's how to install Windows very briefly in half an hour. We might actually revisit some of this again next week and just if people have got questions. Certainly have a look at the labs. There's a very number of very good labs in Chapter 5, particularly the install one, which I have here on my other screen. We'll go through it in greater detail because we'll have a whole 2 hours next week. And I think we've reached a...
Ah, we found a way around that, carting the hard disk from machine to machine.
We have, yes. Is that load hive stuff in the registry? We can take the hard drive driver out and get it to wake up on a new machine?
Yeah,
look, Microsoft don't like you doing it because they're... But, yeah, you can. Let's be honest. There's Windows XP's been around for a long time now. People have worked out how to do these things and how to move Windows, or even how to make it wake up on another hard drive. And we've all, some of us more technically...
Actually,
just to have a backup.
There is a switch when you're setting up Windows to have it do just exactly that. And it's escaping my memory right now, but there is one.
Yeah, there's an article up there that tells you how he manages to clone his Windows from one hard disk to the other, and
yes,
which bits of the registry you smash so that the hard disk drivers will redetect. Yes.
Cool.
Well, just to give you an idea, I know we shouldn't say it, but I upgraded my hard drive in my EEE PC rather than having to reinstall Windows and put all the applications back on, then have to hassle with reactivation because I just happened to decide I want a bigger hard drive. We did what Dr. Bang said, and we have a perfectly working system. It's still the same computer, so why not? As well as if we're distributing that copy of Windows to all and sundry, it's the same computer, it just had an upgrade. Bigger hard drive. End of story. Make no apologies for it. So there it is. So we've got to the boot up after the out of box experience happens and the singing and dancing. You actually appear at the Windows desktop, and I think appearing at the Windows desktop is a nice place to leave this lecture. And we'll come back and discuss it all again next week.
Cool. I have one announcement before we go.
Yes, go ahead, Grace.
The other two classes are taking a holiday, I believe, later this month or earlier next month. We are not going to take that holiday, and we are going to continue on through so that we have more time to work.
You have two options. We can either take a holiday of day and we can go screaming through this material and you will miss out on all sorts of good stuff, or we can not take the holiday and work all the way through and actually get a chance to have interaction and talk all this stuff through, which is the option that we have chosen. But if you guys would like a holiday, we'll just slice this down and just do exactly what's in the notes, and we won't get any of the cool blindy stuff, so it's up to you guys, really.
Let's put it out there for a vote for the students.
Do you guys want your two weeks off where you don't particularly do much and we have to speed all this up and get every lecture into 2 hours, or do we want to work through the supposed holiday that you guys don't observe and that way we'll have a little bit more time to go through this? Well, thank you.
Yeah, I thought people would kind of like that better. So
I agree. And like most of our students this year are American and they don't observe the holiday, so they're very hard-working people. We Australians kick back a bit. But it would be rather handy to sort of have that extra blindy stuff and go through all the
That's what
this
I really like about
to
this whole
activate to talk a whole lot.
Mm. Yeah,
and this is what I like about joining this whole Cavi network thing is that I get to interact with blind people who are doing stuff and see how they do things and share how I do things, and it makes it a lot better.
Well, I often say to people who say to me, oh, you can, sorry, Mark, I'll just finish this. You can teach computers. And I go, yes, I can. And I can even teach blind people how to use computers. Yes, I can. But the way we teach... Okay.
Nice.
We teach people who with a vision impairment in a different way than how we would teach somebody how to use Windows in the sighted world, very differently. And I think Jackie just summed it up beautifully just then. Sorry, Mark, I interrupted you.
Oh, he just said he liked it, which is good.
No, I'm agreeing that we should just keep going. Forget the vacation baloney.
No, Carrie and Grace and Elise, how do you feel about that, though? I mean,
we had already talked about it beforehand, so that's why I said anything.
I'm happy to do it. Well, we went and had a chat to our fearless, well, I did anyway, and I believe Grace did earlier, but I had a chat with our fearless leader last night, and everyone's in agreement that if that's what we want to do, we can, and we will, if that's what we want to do.